kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not dead. I am not dead.
Cause for celebration?
Yeah. I mean, after a week of rain, my body's pissed.
I'm alive. I can't move, but I'm alive.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally, I went to the grocery store today, and it was the first time I've ever been like, I may actually use a wheelchair at the grocery store. But then they were all gone, so I had to hoof it anyway, and I thought I was going to die.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I come home, and I'm like, I am horking down Norco and laying on the couch, and if anybody talks to me, you will not have a head by the time I am done.
That's so. How I am when I have to go somewhere and I have a gout flare up. Like, if they don't have the cart for me, fuck it, I'm not going.
I have never used one of the carts at this point, but today I very heavily considered it. And then
why don't you? You should always use them.
You're the kind
of person that they're made for.
I know, but I feel like weird and guilty about it. You know.
If someone gives you shit, hold up your fingers.
I'll tell you what.
And then put all of them down except one.
I have a handicap placard, yeah, for the car.
Mm-hmm.
And because rheumatoid disease is an automatic approval for one of those. So as soon as they diagnosed me, they like handed me the paper and was like, here you go. Take this to the DMV. You have a card now. I was like, oh, okay.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. So, like, one of the perks of a horribly incurable disease. But I've had people approach me parking in handicap spots, and I have a placard, but they accuse me of it not being mine. It's not happened as often after I got my cane.
Mm.
It happened far more before I got my cane. And it's always old cranky people, and I'm like, motherfucker, you might be 114, but you walk better than me. I need this spot. Scoot along.
They're skipping circles around you.
But I did find myself in a position today where I was a little annoyed because the carts were gone and I had decided I was going to break down and use one. And while we were shopping, there was a younger guy in one of the carts with a kid on his lap and a kid in the cart, which you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to put kids in the little basket on the cart, right?
Yeah.
And that's like just common sense. He was just riding them around the store for fun.
Idiot.
And I was like, I'm sitting here dying, but there they go. Look out of here.
That's when you get the manager and be like, hey, they're abusing the
equipment.
My name
ain't Karen. And yeah, Aki, I do find that incredibly amusing. I make that joke quite a bit that I'm disabled enough for a handicap parking spot, but not disabled enough for disability.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
I don't know. I'm sitting here now waiting on stupid. I have to do a hearing with a judge. And I was doing the math and like the judges in my area only have like a 3% approval rating. So I'm terrified.
Wow.
Yeah, I am absolutely terrified. I'm like, I don't know that I have much of a chance. And I had, not to go on a tangent that I've already done, but I recently got my medical records from the spine clinic because they're closing the hospital I was going to.
Okay.
And so they had to refer me to another hospital. And a new spine clinic. So basically all that shit I did for the last year to get approved for a spine clinic was worthless and I've got to do it again. to get another approval because they're closing the hospital. But I had got my medical records from the one that I got to see twice and they do a disability index. And I didn't know it, that they were doing it as part of my exam. But they gave me a 46 out of 60 for disability.
Does that mean you're very disabled or that you're not very disabled?
Very disabled.
Okay, so you're 60 up there.
Is you're a vegetable. And I hit 46.
Well, congratulations on your high score.
And I was like, overachiever. But yeah, like I knew she was
studied.
I knew she was asking me like some pretty basic questions, but they seemed kind of logical for what's wrong with me. Because she was like, "You can't drive." And I was like, "No, but I know what day and time it is, so I'm doing a little okay."
You know? You only know that because you have a phone.
Who's the president? Oh, don't get me started.
Fuck you. All right, he knows where he is.
So, you know, I mean, like, I'm mentally functional fine, but the rest of me, which is funny because apparently at the new spine clinic that I'm being referred to, they won't see me until I do a 1-hour psych eval. And I'm like, the fuck has this got to do with anything?
Wow.
Sit in the my rheumatologist, last time I saw her, she started me on Cymbalta, which is apparently they use that for neuropathy, which is nerve pain in your fingers and toes and stuff, right? I didn't know. She's always asking me, how's your mindset? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm sorry, but I'm insufferably bubbly. I can't help it. I'm so disgustingly optimistic that I hate myself for it. Like, I realize I have a really cruel disease that's going to slowly kill me and, like, make my life miserable in the process. But did you see the flowers today? You know? And so she's like, okay, she's like, well, normally I only give this to people who are sad, and you're not.
Wow.
But yeah, they gave me, she was like, if it makes you sad when you are normally not, then we can't keep you on it, which I seem to be doing okay with it, but I'm still just an insufferable ball of motherfucking sunshine.
Which is good, because I'm a miserable old fart.
Yeah, we really are opposites.
I just hate everything anymore. Goddamn kids, get off my lawn.
Do you, like, I can't bring myself to be stupidly, like, I get sad. Like, you heard me on my birthday sucked. And I was just sad. But, like, in general, even still, like, I laughed and joked around while we were playing that Monster Energy dirt bike game. I can't remember Supercross. The name.
Yeah. You, like, Monster Energy Supercross, that's the name.
Yeah, there we go. But, you know, like, I was cranky and not happy, but I was still cracking jokes and being an idiot because I can't help myself. This is just the way it is.
And it helps when you're with another idiot who just does nothing but crack jokes.
It does. And basically, like, I'm just surrounded by people who, you know, laugh at my misery with me. And I'm okay with that.
Dark Mika, someone should have bought you a pizza.
Yeah.
Didn't we go over that last week?
We did. We did. And you know what was terrible was I told David, I was like, we finally get to go to the store today. And I just want my birthday cheesecake because I didn't get a cheesecake on my birthday. And you know what I did? I was so sore and cranky by the time we left the store that I left.
Oh, you forgot to get
cheesecake. And so tomorrow I'm going back and get my motherfucking cheesecake. I don't care if I'm supposed to be saving my gas because I'm doing an art show this month. And submitting some of my artwork to a gallery in my hometown.
Oh, nice.
And I have to go back to my hometown, which is kind of far away. And I was like, I can't be wasting my gas. And I was like, fuck that, cheesecake. So.
Well, cheesecake is, you know, cheesecake.
Thank you, $50 in pizza just for me. we had DiGiorno tonight. It was okay.
That's not bad.
Yeah, now tomorrow I'm looking forward to Valentine's Day because we are making a big fancy dinner for Valentine's Day.
I don't know if Ashley and I are doing anything for Valentine's Day. We didn't even do anything for her birthday. Her birthday consisted of her waking up, coming to me while I was at my computer, saying, "Hey, I'm going." I'm like, "Where are you going?" And she's like, "I have work tonight. I have a 12-hour shift."
Oh.
And she left. Like, I didn't even get a chance to, like, wish her happy birthday or, like, anything. It was just, "Hey, I'm leaving. Bye."
Oh.
So her birthday was kind of shitty. So today was better. You know, she slept in and then, you know, we went out to eat and got ourselves a little something to smoke. And now she's sleeping.
You need to get some like can you get edible brownies that are heart shaped? That's what you need. And then be like, "Surprise, bitch."
We have some Rice Krispie treats, I think.
Are they heart shaped?
I should have formed one into a heart.
You should have. You
son of a
fucking
bitch.
Fail. See, this is why you're supposed to reach out to your female friends for advice on how to do this shit properly.
Dark, we could take her to go watch Sonic. I think Sonic. Our local theater is getting Sonic, and if it is, I am absolutely going to see it.
I fully support Ian saying get her a peanut butter cheesecake. Peanut butter cheesecake is incredible.
Oh, no. Ian knows what kind of pie Ashley likes. Peanut butter silk from Friendly's.
So get her that.
Should.
You should. See?
But they're not open. Well, they are open, but I'm doing a show right now.
I'll wait.
Speaking of doing a show, we should probably get to some news, huh?
I guess so.
All right, well, let's see. What kind of news do we have this week? Dragon Ball Z Kakarot sold over 1.5 million copies in its first week on the market. That's pretty impressive.
That is far too many Dragon Ball Z fans.
Jacob seemed to somewhat enjoy the game, but he wasn't really raving about it. I'm interested in checking it out, though.
Yeah, I saw Shiz stream it. That was one of those, like, it's Dragon Ball, and I'm going to just let his stream run in the background while I go do something of value. Because I can't get into Dragon Ball. I'm traumatized from the birth of my first child and Kamehameha, and I just can't.
Ian asking if it's the same dev that did Xenoverse. No, it's not. Kakarot is more of like an action RPG, which is why I'm interested in it.
Yeah, I think, like, I'd rather play Kakarot.
I really got Xenoverse into that One Piece game, that One Piece World Seeker game that came out, because it's a really fun open world action RPG. I don't really care about One Piece. I just had fun with the game.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z, not my thing.
Yeah. BioWare has confirmed that they will be redesigning Anthem over the next few months. Seasonal events will be on hold as they focus on long-term redesign.
Wait, they were doing seasonal events?
Yeah.
Can I be entirely honest about Anthem for a second?
Sure.
The person who gifted it to me sent me a message apologizing. That's how that went down.
What did they say in the message?
Literally just said, "I'm sorry about Anthem."
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was fantastic. The sad part is, like, the couple times we played it, I had some fun, but... some fun, but I have not broke my neck to reinstall it. That's for goddamn sure.
Oh, my Lord. I was going through games on my the living room system because it's been running slow for a while. That's the one that I used to have three hard drives hooked up to. We cut it down to two, and I've been deleting games off of it. And people dropping by chat. Mark, Rob, hi, how are you guys doing?
I was about to say, I don't know these names.
They're good peoples. Good peoples dropping by.
That's so rare to have happen in this stream. I'm like, people, I don't know.
Is the audio weird for anyone, or is it just me? I hope it's not weird for everyone.
Sounds good on my end.
Yeah, so I hope the recording's okay. That would suck. But yeah, Anthem getting redesigned. Let's hope
too
it doesn't
little
suck.
Too late.
I don't know if it's too little too late. I mean,
too late for sure. Maybe not too little. We'll see. But
I think if they really get their shit together and give it one more chance and really put a solid game behind everything, I think they still have a shot.
Maybe.
It is BioWare.
Yeah.
Moving on to a game that I know you enjoy, The Division 2 is on sale this week for a whopping $2.99.
If you do not buy The Division 2 while it is on sale, what the fucking fuck is wrong with fucking you?
Tell us how you really feel.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, $2.99. It's apparently on sale on all the platforms for $2.99. Mm-hmm. Looks like with Season 2 releasing, they wanted to get a bunch of people's eyes on the game.
I think that was a good way to go about it. A very good way to go about it. It's funny you bring up Season 2 because I was going to talk about the Warlords of New York DLC.
Mm-hmm.
And how, even though it's releasing on the 3rd of March, it is not included in the year one season pass.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. I honestly don't. Year one, all the year one content was free. If you had the season pass, you got to play things early. For example, episode 3 became available on the 12th for season pass owners, and it's not available until the 19th for everybody else. So you get some extra time. You get to, you know, rip through the missions and grind out the good loot. If you play conflict, that's a big advantage because you have exotics that other people wouldn't have. Or in the Dark Zone 2, that would be an advantage.
Division 2 is not on Apple. Okay.
Thank God. fuck Apple. Anyway.
Oh, Lord.
Apple and PlayStation, man. They can just both get wrecked.
You want to know what is on Apple, though?
Hmm.
This is some other news, or did you want to finish your Division thought?
All I was going to say is people are mad that they have to pay for it, but I'm okay with it.
That's because you're addicted to The Division. So,
but I also think that it's important to pay for content.
Yeah.
Like, I understand and I appreciate the whole don't separate your player base by making, you know, DLC that not everybody's going to have. And I think that was a problem that The Division 1 struggled with, especially given the type of DLC that it had, because, you know, Underground and Survival especially and Last Stand were very dependent on having other people to play it with.
Yeah.
And so fracturing the base and saying, okay, well, if you have I had friends who had Underground but didn't have Survival, or had Survival but didn't have Last Stand, and it's like, what if we want to switch back and forth while we're playing? Then we got to ditch the people we're playing with.
No.
So I can get that. But at the same time, the sheer volume of content that's going to be in Warlords of New York far justifies the price of it. They did a fucking 1-to-1 replica of Manhattan.
Wow.
Okay. That's insane.
That is.
That cannot be free. It just can't. I mean, if it was content where, yeah, you're still in Washington, it's just adding more missions, like the episodes were, well, it can be free, but they have to pay their development team.
Yeah,
six fucking studios worked on The Division. Six fucking studios. That's a lot of paychecks. So
yeah, it is.
I want the creators of the games that I enjoy to have a life and be able to, you know, feed their families.
Yeah, so buy the game while it's on sale this week for $3.
Yeah. I mean, I supported people buying it when it was, I paid $100 for it. So
did I. I got the ultimate whatever
steelbook edition. When it gets to, you know, a year after launch and the content's all there, I would rather somebody pick it up from a sale than not play it, you know?
Yeah.
But I hope that if you pick it up for $3, then maybe you'll consider throwing the $30 at the DLC. Because it's gonna it's a 1-to-1 replica of Manhattan!
I take it you're excited.
I am very excited for
it. I can tell.
It's fucking incredible looking.
You know what I'm excited about? The iOS news.
Ugh. And no, Aki, the DLC is not included in Season Pass. That's what people are mad about.
Yeah, that is kind of dumb. But Microsoft began a limited Project X Cloud iOS test flight preview this week. I slept and I missed out, so I'm not involved. But
what a bitch.
It's nice that they open it up and there's finally some people getting to check it out on iOS. Apparently the only game available right now is Master Chief Collection due to some kind of requirements with Apple. I think it's like accessing stuff from a different store. I don't know what the rules are, but hopefully for full launch there won't be any kind of issues.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of the beta and stuff, though, is to work that shit out, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if it's going to have issues, have them now and get it out of your system.
Yeah. Let's see. EA, this is some crazy news. EA is returning Need for Speed series to Criterion. Games is going to rebrand to EA Gothenburg and become an engineering hub, which I think is weird given the latest Need for Speed was the best in years.
Yeah.
I thought Criterion was a hub company itself now.
I've always known Need for Speed as Ghost Games.
Yeah, well, it's going to Criterion, who did Payback on the 360. I think it was Payback. And I think another one after it, and then they bounced the Need for Speed property around quite a bit. But yeah, Ghost Games is pretty much no more.
Wow.
Hopefully everyone there gets repositioned and put in a new position in the company, and hopefully too many jobs aren't lost. But how about a new goddamn Burnout game, since Criterion is apparently back to work?
I don't have the attachment to Burnout that I do Need for Speed.
I don't know why. Burnout Paradise was so, so good.
I know I've heard everybody love Burnout Paradise. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that was a game that existed. Give me Need for Speed again, though.
I don't know.
That's a bummer. I'm sad to hear that.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Some other sad news. It's been confirmed that Jeff Keighley's not going to E3 this year.
Am I supposed to be sad about this? That's the Game Awards guy, right?
Yeah.
I thought so. Okay.
This is apparently the first time in 25 years he's missing the event and skipping out on it.
Bad girl.
He said something to the effect of knowing how it's being run, he doesn't want to be affiliated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. As long as E3 keeps showing cool games that I want to buy every year, I'm going to keep watching it.
Yeah, I don't have any, like, I don't have a dog in the fight. I just don't. Yeah, I enjoy E3. I would break my neck to get to go to E3. So... Yeah, I
honestly think we're at the point where we could get press passes in. It's just, you know, getting there.
Yeah.
Getting and staying there.
Flying across the country would be a thing.
Yeah.
For somebody who barely gets to go to the surrounding states. But I know I keep hearing, oh, E3 is dead and E3 is scummy. And I'm sure there's things that I just don't keep up on. But, you know.
It's still a bucket list item for me. I still want to go. one of these years I want to get there. I'm hoping
there's like, for me, there's like an emotional attachment to, I guess nostalgia's a bitch, you know?
Yeah.
But I like, in my head, E3 is just this incredible expo, and I just want to go. Yeah. But yeah.
Nostalgia is a bitch. Kmart is closing.
Ours closed
in and all the shelves were gone, and there's like just a few things left, and it's a weird emotional thing. It's like this store that has been here my entire life is going away.
Yeah.
And we had a good friend who used to work there, Gail. She passed away a year or two ago. Kmart, they just couldn't recover without Gail, I guess. The store was doomed. Oh, what is Ian posting in chat? Oh, something about E3. I don't know. Anyway, last bit of news I have is that Big Ben Interactive is now rebranding, and they are known as Nacon.
Wait, who did?
Big Ben Interactive.
Yeah, I saw you say that. Okay.
Yeah, they are now Nacon. Nacon. I'm guessing it's pronounced Nacon. I'm
gonna repeatedly pronounce that naked on accident.
I'm thinking Nacon, like bacon.
Yeah.
But Nacon sounds more official. Or it might be Nacon. Big Ben Interactive is so much easier to pronounce.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the news I got. Anything you want to talk about?
Nope. No. We talked about Division. That was all I had.
That's all you care about is just the Division.
Yep.
Man, they just fuck the ESA. E3 is not very well liked in chat.
No.
I think we struck a nerve.
I mean, hey, everybody's got their thing. Like, I don't know. So the thing that Ian shared was that basically E3 corporate or whatever saying that they wanted to, it looks like it was like a PowerPoint presentation or something presented at a meeting. And, you know, it's like partner with influencers for the sake of social good, but just so it gets us money. And if we're entirely honest, like any corporation that is taking on the social good is doing so because polls have showed them that will get the money. I mean, well, think about when Gillette had the ad about toxic masculinity. If they didn't think that ad would have made them more money than not putting that ad out, they wouldn't have hesitated to not put that ad out. That ad would have never happened.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not people there actually feel that way. When it comes to corporations, that is all such... No, Aki, that's a great ad, honestly. But, I mean, they put it out because it made them money and not because whether or not they stand behind that could all be thrown in the air. I guarantee you every CEO is like, no, I'm good with it. You know, it doesn't matter to them. You know, Ian said, imagine an altruist who isn't helping for selfless reasons. But that's every corporation. Like, there is no altruism in this is an entirely different topic. Entirely different podcast. But I mean, as far as corporations go, there's all altruism in corporations is for gain. It's not. It's because marketing tells them it'll work, not because they actually give a fuck.
No.
You know.
I don't know. To each their own.
Yeah.
Should we do some reviews?
Yeah, I guess so.
Might as well, huh?
I'm going to be a bumbling fool because I didn't make proper notes this week. And I'm medicated. Sweet. So I probably should have made some proper notes, but I'm fine. It'll be fine.
All right. Well, first game to talk about this week is called Glass Masquerade 2 Illusions, developed by Onyx Loot and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati. It released February 11th on PS4, 13th on Switch, 14th on Xbox One for $11.99. Glass Masquerade 2 Illusions is a dreamlike collection of artistic jigsaw puzzles to piece together at your own relaxed pace. Dive into the rabbit hole of the abstract and fantastical, putting together stained glass fragments to solve dreams and riddles. Cole, I know we loved the first Glass Masquerade. How is the second one?
So it's pretty much, pretty much the same concept. You have a circle in the middle of the screen, and then there are two rotating, kind of like, imagine a Lazy Susan of broken stained glass pieces. And then you can, but they're blacked out, so you can't actually see any colors or anything on them. You just see the shapes. You want to take those shapes, put them together to create the image in the middle of the circle. The first Glass Masquerade was insanely easy. I believe it was one of those that was like a 2 to 3 hour completion. Just put the puzzles together and call it a day. They've ratcheted up the difficulty quite a bit for Glass Masquerade 2. Not necessarily in a negative way. Just that it's far more difficult and time consuming than the first. One of my biggest complaints with Glass Masquerade, the first one, was that the later puzzles got more difficult by the size of the jigsaw pieces not being relative to their size and position within the puzzle. I have not had that problem with Glass Masquerade 2, but there are some extra or some different difficulties that kind of make it a little harder, if that makes sense. You can play on easy mode and the pieces will auto orientate so that you can just see where they're kind of supposed to fit in within the puzzle. But the thing that gets me the most is that a lot of the pieces are broken along their color lines. So unlike Glass Masquerade 1, where you could kind of see where a piece would fit by looking at the pieces that you had around it, You can't do that in Glass Masquerade 2, because you may have a piece that has a large swoop on one side, and it may be completely purple, but the piece that it's supposed to butt up against might be completely blue. And so you have no orientation for where it might go other than the shape of the edges of it. So it's far more difficult to just be like, this jagged edge fits perfectly with that jagged edge, and not have the color guidance to help as well. You never have any indication of what the puzzle is going to look like complete until it is complete. So that makes it that much harder, because again, if you've got purple lined up against blue, but there's no break between the two colors that gives you any indication that they should go together. Ian is having a party making fun of me. But you know, it can be really frustrating, and you're just sitting there going, well, I just have to keep trying the jagged little pieces until I get them where I want them to be. Yeah. This is even harder in hard difficulty. I don't remember the first Glass Masquerade having a hard difficulty. Maybe I'm just like blocked it out, forgot about it. But for Glass Masquerade 2, you can press Y and switch over to hard difficulty. And now, instead of the pieces auto-orientating themselves into the proper position, you have to rotate them.
Oh, man.
So again, you have no indication of where this motherfucker is supposed to go based on color or like perception of what's around it. Just the shape.
Yeah.
And now you've got to rotate it and figure out where the fuck it's supposed to go on top of that.
That seems really mean.
I was really surprised at how difficult it was. When I first tore into it, I thought, I'm gonna knock this out in a few hours late at night and just have a ball. I loved the first Glass Masquerade, and I was like, this is the perfect sit back, relax, no stress, yeah, there's a timer, but you can make it go off the screen. You don't even got to look at it. Nobody cares how long it took you to put it together. Just relax and put a puzzle together. I have never been so stressed out by a basic puzzle as I was when I decided that I was going to tear into this on hard difficulty and was like, I have no guidance. If I wanted to do a puzzle on hard, I had to do it on easy first, just so I had like a basic understanding of what I was trying to put together.
No.
So I was a little disappointed that it was so difficult compared to what it had been. But it's like
one extreme or the other.
Yeah. You do have the option of having the hint fragments, and those are a big help. Hint fragments, basically, they glow red and they indicate these are your outer ring. You won't get all of the outer ring, but you will get enough to get you started. But if you've played this enough, you can get by without the hint fragments because it's a circle. There's only so many ways that those edges are going to fit together. But again, on hard, when you've got to rotate it, I would recommend turning the hint fragments on to at least get you started. At least one of them, because otherwise you're going to be crying and like rack up a 4-hour timer on. I fully expected to be like, oh, I'm going to knock this out so quick. No, I have like 4 days of working on these puzzles and I'm only about halfway through them.
Wow.
And I was so surprised. That said, the puzzles are gorgeous. They're a little creepy this time around. There's definitely some like spookier themed ones. I'm assuming that's to allure back to the illusions moniker, but there's some creepy looking puzzles this time around, but they are still just as gorgeous as they were the first time. They all look like stained glass masterpieces. Shout out to whoever their artist is, because they kill it with these puzzles.
Cool. So overall, $12 on it. What do you think?
It's still a really good puzzle game. And it's still one of those games, like, I play a lot of shooters, and I play a lot of, like, platformers and shit that's stressful. And I still want to just, like, when I turn those off, kick back and load up Glass Masquerade 2 and trudge my way through the puzzles as hard as they may be. It's a great palate cleanser kind of game. So I absolutely still give it a buy it. Yeah, it's hard, and know it going into it. Don't think that it's going to be quite the easy completion that the first one was. Yeah. But it plays perfectly. It's a challenge, and you can still just sit back in and just enjoy it and relax with it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Luna, the Shadow Dust, developed by Lantern Studio, published by Application Systems Heidelberg, released February 13th on PC for $19.99. Inspired by the adventure games of old, Luna, the Shadow Dust is a moving tale of two playable companions drawn together in a hand-animated puzzle adventure featuring a breathtaking original soundtrack and beautiful 2D cinematics. Cole, we talked about this one a while ago on the show. We had some guests on to chat about the game. It's been a while. The game is out. It is here. How is it?
This game was absolutely worth the wait. Luna, the Shadow Dust is one of the prettiest point-and-click games I have ever played in my life. It has a very warm, cozy atmosphere to it, while it's got this almost like a children's book aesthetic. It reminds me very much of the art in Where the Wild Things Are. It's just everything about the little boy and his little bunny hat and your little companion. It's just so charming and just it invites you into the world. You can get lost in it and feel like you're just a part of it. You're really moving in that world. Even though it's just a point and click scene to scene type of game, you're just like, when you're there, you're in it. The soundtrack is all piano based and it definitely plays a role in pulling it all together as well. Gorgeous soundtrack, gorgeous artwork. I was kind of surprised. I was doing a little bit of poking around, and I like to go see, especially with puzzle games, what other people are saying about them. And so that was the first thing I did when the embargo was up, was go snooping around. And I was kind of surprised because I saw a lot of people complaining that they thought that the puzzles weren't intuitive enough. And I was so surprised because, yeah, I got stuck on a couple, but most of the puzzles that people were complaining about, the solutions were right there in the scene. And I was like, okay, so clearly when I state my review, one of the most important things I want to say about the puzzles is pay attention to your surroundings.
Pay attention, stupid.
The answers are right fucking there. Usually there will be like one little quirk to the puzzle that kind of adds a little bit of challenge. Like one of the ones that I got stuck on was you had to actually send your companion up. Like, he goes up a ladder, and then from the ladder, he jumps up onto a shadow of the ladder, like it's the next rung, and then becomes a shadow himself. And then as he moves along the shadows, like, you have to stand in front of him to cast the shadow so that he can jump from your shadow onto some shadows of some books. But as this happens, you also have to control the little boy, so that, like, he removes obstacles. So, like, a thorny vine comes up and casts a shadow, and you need to close the drawer so that the vine goes away. But then a bird comes out. That one I got stuck on because that one required some timing. And by the time I got done with it, I was like, I never want to do this puzzle again. But one of the ones that somebody had said they got stuck on, and they were like, oh, I just randomly went through the doors until it worked out. And I'm sitting here going, there's pictures on the wall, and they point to you in the direction you should be going. I don't know how they missed it. I don't know how they missed it. I'm like, it was one of the easy, it's like the second or third floor of the tower. It's one of the easiest puzzles in the game.
Wow.
And they were just like randomly walking through the doors until they happened to get the right combination.
That
I was flabbergasted. Because the puzzles, I mean, I say that because I want to reiterate, just like, the puzzles are not that hard. They're intuitive, and if you look, if you take a moment to really look at the surroundings, yeah, sometimes you might need to like click on things and discover that's not the right pattern or you're not close enough. That was my biggest thing. There was one puzzle where like I wasn't getting a part of the puzzle. I don't want to give away a spoiler. So like I wasn't getting one character close enough to an obstacle to get rid of it. Yeah, Cole's TLDR, get good. Basically, because I mean, if you've ever played a point and click, you know to look at the surroundings.
Yeah.
And so I was just really surprised that people were saying it was so hard, because I didn't think that it was that difficult at all. I thought it was really well done and creative. Again, I mean, there's a clear indication of how much effort was put into these puzzles to create them in such a way that they felt like natural progression and that they didn't just overwhelmingly break you to solve them, you know? Yeah. I play a lot of point and clicks where sometimes the Deponia series, for example, the solutions are just so out there that you never think to do that shit, you know? Like, you can't do it without a guide. I never felt that way with Luna and the Shadow Dust. Like, I was just walking through it in each world, and I was like, yeah, I know what I'm supposed to do when I'm in each room. Might not always do it the first try, but that's a puzzle game. Yeah. And if you work at it, you're going to get through it. So, I mean, I definitely don't find that the puzzles were anything that you couldn't sluice out with a little bit of time and patience. I've waited a long time for Luna and the Shadow Dust. I think I said I'd been following it for at least a year on social media, on Twitter, just waiting for it. And I was not disappointed. I loved every second with the game. And I was just, I would find myself just sitting and like looking at how the artwork had been done, because I could see myself using that art style to inspire my own work. I was just in love with it. Absolutely.
Well, then overall $20. What do you think?
Buy it quickly. Buy it now.
Not even a hesitation on that.
No, just if you can't wish list it, buy it. Buy it with the art book. Please buy it with the art book. Don't look at the art book until after you've played the game, though, because there are some spoilers in it. But absolutely buy that art book. Buy the soundtrack. Get the whole bundle and just get lost in it, because it's beautiful.
Awesome. All right, next game to talk about is called Super Mega Space Blaster Special Turbo, developed and published by Bare Knuckle Development, released February 12th on the Xbox One for $4.99. A modern take on the retro arcade shooter, Super Mega Space Blaster Special Turbo is a fast-paced, frantic blast of shoot-em-up with loads to unlock and leaderboards to climb. Cole, tell us about Super Mega Space Blaster Special Turbo.
Boy, I can't wait until they make a definitive edition of this game. I don't think their name is long enough. Let's start off with this little note. When I started playing this long-ass title game, I thought, this is super simple shmup. You have a static, starry field screen. If you're playing the mode where you got to protect the mothership, there's a mothership at the bottom and like a health bar, and you know, shit flies in at you from left, right, and top, and you just destroy it, and it's a shmup. Easy peasy, right? A little bit of bullet hell. Sometimes shit gets a little popped off, but it's a shmup. And then I immediately died. And I was like, okay, so it's a hard shmup. Here we are. I can figure this out. And I did. And then I died.
Again?
And then I died again.
And again.
And then I said, fuck protecting this mothership. I'm going to go do a different mode. Can't even remember the proper name of the mode now. Should have made better notes. But I can't remember it. But in this mode, it was safe to get close to the edges. By the way, if you're protecting the mothership, and most of the modes in this game, you can't get close to the edges. If you do, poof, you're dead. Which is definitely where a lot of the difficulty comes from, and probably why I kept dying a lot. There's an achievement for hitting the brakes. That's how dangerous it is to get close to the edges. Like, they reward you for not being a jackass that flies into the red. Okay? And I was the jackass that flew into the red a whole lot and had to, like, scum the achievement and just stop in the middle.
Did you not get the memo where he recommended playing the mode where you save the astronauts first?
I did, but then I was like, I don't follow the rules. And I thought, why would that not be the first mode it offers you if that's the easiest one? So I thought, no, I'm going to play it in the order it's offered. And the mothership is the first one it's offered. And the mothership is fucking hard. And you shouldn't play it until you've, like, bought extra ships and know how to actually shoot. And I have never played a shmup bullet hell that actually makes you keep watch on your bullet count.
Yeah.
It's hard. I enjoyed it, and I kept playing again after I died because I was utterly determined to do something successful. And then I would just die again. Save up your coins. Buy a different ship with some different guns and hope for a little bit more luck. But it all boils down to luck. It's one of those games that's deceptively simple. Like, if you play a shmup, when I saw the videos, I was like, I play shmups. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to be fine. I'm great at bullet hells. What the fuck are you talking about? I got fucking nowhere. Like, this is, you're going to have to commit to a time investment to get anywhere in Super Mega Space Blast Blop, the Turbo Definitive
HD remix, know. EX plus alpha.
Yeah, D-make. Gotta throw that in there. Rattle like Alexa D-makes. But that said, it's a $5 game. It's really well done. It's just that it's super hard. And it's something that you really have to commit to a time sink on and getting good and actually, like, earning your coins and upgrading your ship and putting thought into how you're going to play it and not just careening into the walls.
Root Beer said they got to number 2 on the leaderboards on the Switch.
That's Show pretty off.
Impressive.
How many hours did that take? That's what I want to know. Because I don't want to admit how many hours I've played and how nowhere I've gotten.
Well, then the only question you do have to answer is $4.99. What do you think of Super Mega Space Blaster Special Turbo?
I was going to give it a try it because I think the difficulty of it can put a lot of people off. But also at $4.99, I kind of feel like it's a fuck it, why not? Because it is good and it's fun and you're going to find yourself just tearing into it over and over regardless of what happens. It's horribly addictive in that way.
And it's only $5, so
fuck it. Yeah, so I'm comfortable with a fuck it, why not?
All right. I have a feeling we might have a couple of those because the next game is also $5 and it is called Project Starship, developed by Panda Indie Studio and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. It released February 12th on Xbox One for $4.99. Take the role of Garrett or Gwen, pilots charged with saving their world from an ancient evil. Evade, adapt, and survive randomly generated challenges that are never the same twice. Take down gods and demons alike in unpredictable bullet hell shoot 'em up action and dive deeper to confront the hidden evil eye that watches over all. Cole, tell us about Project Starship.
All that story was in this game?
Believe it or not.
Where?
Yeah, exactly. It's not that a story sounds, heavy game. It's a story heavy horrible, intro.
But I didn't know any of that shit happened. All I know is that you start the game, you have a seizure. Because of all the blinking colors.
It has a warning.
You press X or start. I don't even remember what I pressed. I was having a seizure. And then you go into a shmup-like game. And, well, before that, you get to choose your character. You can choose between a dude or a girl. I chose the girl. I don't know if there's any benefit to choosing the dude. I don't give a fuck. I played it with the girl, and I was happy like that. Girl power. But then you just hold A, shoot all the things, and be happy about it. I was not mad at any of it whatsoever. The power-ups, though, I'm a little mad at. I feel like none of the power-ups were helpful as a power-up. They were all more hindrance than they were worth.
Oh, there were a couple that were helpful. EMP. The shields were nice.
Yeah, and the EMP was good. But then, like, there's the one that's literally called The TV is Broken. You're playing a shmup, and your screen gets covered in static. You're gonna die. Don't pick up the broken TV. I don't care how close you are to the achievement for 50 power-ups. Just don't touch that motherfucker. You ain't getting nowhere.
Yeah, and you'll get that achievement soon anyway.
Yeah, because this is an easy-peasy game. This is one of those, I don't know that it even took me half an hour. I rolled through it really quick.
I think it took me like 20 minutes maybe to get my 1,000 achievement points on this game. It was fun though. I had a blast with the game. It was enjoyable to play. The visuals were really cool. Mm-hmm. There's apparently a Project Starship X that is a sequel to this that I would love to see them bring that over as well.
Yeah, especially if they're going to make it easy achievements again. I wish that I had known a little more about the story, though. It would have been nice that there was a little more detail. One thing that I did think was cool was that there was a hardcore mode, and it was really super fucking hard. You were one hit dead.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing on easy, you get 5 hits. So that's a sharp difficulty spike there to go from 5 hits to 1. I don't recommend it. And after I realized what I'd done the first time, I was like, I will never touch that H ever again. Get fucked.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I want this to be easy peasy. But yeah, I had a blast with it. I just sat down. I actually played it right after we got home from the grocery store, and I just kicked back in my chair while Dee and the girls were putting away groceries, and I'm just like blowing through, and it's just pop, pop, pop achievements, and I was so happy, and I was so good, and I was like, yeah!
It was just mindless fun. It's nothing super mm-hmm. deep. It's nothing that's going to take up a ton of your time, but it's fun to pick up. It's fun to play through. It's mm-hmm. fun to get a bunch of easy achievements, and it's only $5. So what is your verdict?
Yeah, I feel a little weird giving two fuck it why nots today.
Why?
But it's also kind of where we are. Well, I feel like I should be more reserved with fuck it why nots. I've been throwing them out a little haphazardly lately.
I mean, $5 games, that's kind of like what that rating exists for.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm going to roll with a fuck it, why not? Knock out some easy achievements, have a little bit of fun. If shmups aren't your thing, then you're probably just not even going to fuck it, why not it, unless you really want the achievements. But, you know, if you enjoy just blasting through some weird, I can't make any sense out of that story. I can't believe that was a thing. I'm just like, where? But if you're just going to blast through, you know, and have a little bit of fun and survive some bullets, and here you go.
Awesome. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Reed Remastered, developed by PX Link, published by Rattalaika Games. It released February 11th on PS4 and Vita, 12th on Xbox One, 14th on the Switch for $4.99. Long ago, in a beautiful and mysterious world, an old supercomputer created the digital world that is now breaking down. In a final effort to stop the impending end of the virtual space, a small creature named Reed was created to save the world. Help Reed collect information cubes in order to recalibrate the world and reboot the system. Cole, another game that you didn't realize had that much story, huh?
Where the fuck was all that?
In the intro that I just read.
I wish you could see my face right now. I was just like, where was... I thought I was a cat. Reed is a cat. But he was in a computer... What is it, the Matrix? Because he was in a computer simulation this whole time? I mean, I thought it was a little weird you were collecting cubes. You know, seemed like better options out there for what a cat would do, but you were just a cat jumping over spikes and collecting cubes to open a door so you could jump over more spikes, and then you would fall and you would die and you'd jump over more spikes again. Sometimes there were buzzsaws and you'd jump into those because you're a jackass and not a jackrabbit because you were a cat. I'm so flabbergasted. What is this night?
Yeah. Yeah. All that story was there.
Where?
Mysteriously hiding.
I feel like the worst reviewer in the world that, like, I 1K'd both of these games and I had no idea there were stories. By the way, you can 1K this. It's super easy. Well, I don't want to say it's super easy. You had some trouble with some of the later levels.
No, I didn't beat it yet. I'm still working on it.
You didn't beat it. How far did you make?
I don't even know off the top of my head.
The worst.
I am the worst.
I did 45 levels. Yeah. I went above and beyond. You only need 44 for the achievement. I did 45.
How many are there?
I'm not sure. Because there's no, like, there's chapter select, but it only lets you go back through the ones you've already done. Doesn't let you see how many's ahead. So at that point, when I saw that I was on 45 and I was like, I got the achievements and I got like an hour until the show. So I guess I'm done. I'm going to eat dinner and drink some Dr. Pepper and get ready. Not make notes. But yeah, I do have some issues. This is not the smoothest of platformers. You struggled. I had a harder time. This is not one of those 15-minute Rattalaikas. This is one you're actually going to have to buckle up for. You do have to complete 44 levels. I did have to play a couple levels twice because there were secret areas and I had missed them. Although I would like to say there's a nice touch. I thought when I saw the achievements for secrets, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to start all over at one again and just keep going through until I find them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went back to the chapter select, I realized that there's a question mark on the levels with the secrets.
Oh, that's helpful.
So that was super easy, and I just had to go back into those levels instead of playing through all 44 again until I found what I had missed. Once you know what you're looking for with the secrets, then they're super obvious too, and there's only 4 achievements for them. But it is a little more challenging. The controls are not quite as smooth as I would like. I'm one of those picky people, and I think when it comes down to a platformer where there's a lot of precision involved, I don't like when you jump and the character doesn't just land. When they scoot a little to the right or to the left,
mm-hmm.
that annoys the fuck out of me. And there were a lot of times where I was 923% sure I had landed dead center of 2 spikes, but I would die anyway. There were so many times where I just died and was like, what did I even do?
Yeah.
But it's the nature of the game. I'm a little surprised there wasn't like a die 200 time achievement, because I'm pretty sure that I managed that. The other issue that I had is that some of the levels require you to stand in front of like these torch switches that will make a platform appear. While those torches are lit, if you have not turned off screen shake, you're fucked. That screen just bounces all over the place. And it is absolutely hell. Even with screen shake turned off, there's like a glare that comes out from those torches. And it makes seeing what you're trying to do really hard. So there were times where I'd hit the switch, think that the platform had materialized because it should have had plenty of enough time, go for the jump, and splat into the spikes I would go, do it all over again.
No.
That's annoying enough. That's twice as annoying when you've already opened the door and you're just trying to get out. When you're literally 3 steps from the door and the motherfucker decides that you jumped and now he's going to move 2 steps whether you want him to or not, and you have to start over.
That's the joy of games like these, though.
It is. I don't know that joy is the proper term, Joe. That said, if I can do it, anybody fucking can.
True.
Because I tend to get super annoyed with these kind of platformers. And lose my patience with them, and I do half and get the achievements and go, fuck it, that's enough. But I actually managed to keep chugging through. When I got the achievement for 40 levels, I was like, the fuck was I doing? How did I get this far? I thought I was only on like 15.
Wow.
Their levels are super short and you roll through them really quickly once you know what you're doing and you adjust to actually getting through them. And I thought they were pretty creative too. So especially some of the later levels, you have to do a little bit of thinking if you're really going to get through them. And I was impressed. Was not expecting that from a Rattalaika.
Well, for $5, what do you say for this Rattalaika?
I don't think that it's a fuck it, why not? I think it's just a full on buy it. I give them credit. This was not one of those. You don't have to play through the entire game if you don't want to. You just have to do like the first 3 levels kind of games. And I can appreciate that. There was a bit of challenge involved and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's fun. I want to get through more of it. I just got to get the patience to sit down and knock out some of those stages.
Yeah. If I did it, you can.
I know. I believe in myself.
You can do it.
Anyway, we got one more game to talk about, and we are going to bring in Dark Mika, so let us call her up right now, get her involved in this call.
I live. It's
yay, she's here.
It's how Aki.
How are you doing today, Aki?
Bored, honestly. Very, very, very bored. All I've been doing is editing stuff all day today.
Nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah, but it's so fucking boring. So boring.
What are you editing?
Reviews. The other place I work at.
Trying to get involved in your life, and you're just like shutting us out. You're just one word.
She doesn't love us.
I can tell.
Oh, no, I just don't think it's exactly, you know, right for me to be like, yeah, for the other place I'm working at.
Oh, like I give a shit.
I do it all the time.
I guess that's true. Yeah, no, I have 4 reviews I am editing today and scheduling, and I've gotten 2 of them done, and the first 2 were like 2 to 3 pages each, and I'm a slow reader. So it took a while, and I'm on the 3rd one actually right now even. So it sucks. I do not like editing. It's misery. It really is. I fucking hate it.
And well, I'm doing at least the you easy don't have to edit for me, right?
Oh, thank God. I don't even know how to edit video, so.
Neither do I.
Because, like, the other place, all I'm doing is editing written stuff and then scheduling it for posting. Scheduling I do like because it's quick and it's easy and people praise me for it. Editing, you don't get nothing for editing. That is a thankless job, just like being a fucking janitor or a sanitation worker.
Or a podcaster.
No one gives a shit. Yeah.
Or a podcaster. Definitely a podcaster. Thankless.
Well, you sometimes get Betty's.
Yeah, true. True. That's, very
that's
true.
Kind of praise, sort of. Kind of, a little bit.
We all get to hear George when that happens, so that's a reward for everybody. But you do have one review for us, so we are going to take care of that. That is called Pause and Effect, My Dogs Are Human, developed by Shimmershoft, Shimmersoft, not Shimmershoft. I wish I was in your pills. Holy hell. Developed by Shimmersoft, published by Sadok LLC, released February 14th on Steam, I believe for $4.99. That is the price that is available on itch.io and GameJolt. So if it's not $4.99, we'll update you next week. A quirky comedic visual novel where dogs transform into people and nonsense ensues. Aki, tell us about Pause and Effect, My Dogs Are Human.
Okay, it's a visual novel. It's a kinetic one, which means you don't get to make choices. That's masquerading as an adventure one where you do get to make choices. Because it has a bunch of choices, but they change very, very minor flavor text. And that's it until the ending where you can make one of 2 choices that give you like a 2 or 3 minutes worth of reading for an epilogue. That's different, but that's it. It's pretty much just a kinetic novel, visual novel. You play as Sadie, and you know, it's a day, well, 2 days in Sadie's life, where her little cute little Pomeranians, the fluff balls of the dog world, actually used to have one. Her name was Pretty Girl. I was very inventive. What can I say? I had her at the same time. Ironically, I had her at the exact same time that I had my pet coyote. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was. They got along. It was interesting. She has a male and a female one, and you can choose their name. You can also even change Sadie's name to whatever you want as well. But the Pomeranians, you have a list of names you can choose from to name them. You can't name them completely independently. And it's just, they both change into naked people one night for absolutely no reason. Just because, I mean, that's a good reason, right?
I mean, why not, right?
Exactly. And, then she has to just figure out how to deal with these 2 people who aren't people. They don't quite, like, they understand language to a degree from hearing her talk to other people, but they don't really get anything. So she's effectively dealing with like 5-year-olds who have an adult's vocabulary, a broken one, but still an adult one. And she has to try and figure out how to treat them now that they're people. As well as listening to them talk about things that she never wanted to hear them talk about because they were dogs at the time. Like, for instance, the female Pomeranian liked to watch her have sex with her ex-boyfriend. And she called him, "Oh, you mean, I really liked watching you do the boom bang." And Sadie just freaks out every time that's mentioned. She's like, "Where did you even hear that?" "Well, that's just what it sounded like in between you saying, 'Yes, give it to me good.'" It was fantastic. Yeah.
It's not in the mail. I didn't expect the adult stuff out of a game called Pause and Effect. I thought this would be more family friendly oriented, but I guess not.
Well, it's mostly family.
This friendly, does not kinda. Sound
it's for teens.
No, it's not.
Oh yeah.
Well, one of the features is adult humor, so I'm going to guess no, it's not for kids.
No.
I consider it a teen level.
Includes brief nudity, comic mischief, drug references, suggestive themes, and strong language.
Yes, in the very beginning, she smokes pot once. And then when the animals turn into humans, the female dog has nipples. You can see her breasts. That's it. She actually is like, I'm pretending like they don't have nipples, and suddenly both of them, their nipples disappear. But that's like the entirety of all the really, you know, bad stuff effectively. Other than that, it's just some comedic things like boom bang and stuff that they talk about. Like, you know what they're talking about, but they don't, you know, necessarily specify or show anything. It's just talking in passing. So if for teens, yeah, it's good for teens. They'd find it hilarious. And it's just about, you know, her dealing with them for a little over a day. That's it. The entire game can be beaten within an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Isn't awful for a visual novel, I guess.
Most of the visual novels I play take about 40 to 60 hours.
For the price that they're asking.
Oh yeah, for $5, yeah, that's not terrible. So, and the flavor text is all really funny, and there's lots of choices, so you can see all the different flavor texts by replaying it numerous times. Unless you're like me and you just make a save and then go through them all because you're a lazy bitch, but that's a me thing. For $5, I think it's worth it. It was really funny. The ending did choke me up a little bit. Didn't make me cry, just choked me up a little bit. But overall, it's really, really funny. And $5, I say, yeah, get it. It's pretty good. And it's a good entry to kinetic novels, as far as I'm concerned.
And there's nipples.
For like 10 seconds.
Rock on.
Yeah. The really amusing thing about that is Sadie has small boobs. Her dog, when it turned into a human, has big boobs. And she makes a point of saying that, because originally, before she changes their names, because when a character talks, it says who is talking. So like anytime Sadie's talking, it says Sadie and then all her lines. Well, when the female Pomeranian changes into the person, the first thing it's listed as is the big chested girl.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
The best part of this entire review is that my mom's dog is named Sadie.
That's fantastic.
Well, on that note, that is it for this episode. Aki, thanks for being here.
Of course. Always happy to be here. I'd like to be here more often, honestly.
Oh, we just got to get more Steam stuff in for you. Hopefully people start responding to us and we'll put your ass to work.
Yeah, well, it'd also be nice if, you know, I had a better... I was at home and had my better computer, too.
Yeah, that would be helpful. But
yeah. But, you know, you only have to wait another little over a month, and then I'll be home.
True. So we'll get there. Eventually, we'll get there.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're all in this together. We'll figure it out. What other cliche tropes can I say?
All aboard and beat me up, Scotty.
Oh, geez.
Cole, do you have any good redneck-isms for the night?
I don't think I do. I think I ran out of redneck when I said lines.
Colored lines.
That sounds incredibly horrible without context.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to come back to bite me in the ass at some point.
Oh, Jesus. Anybody have any final words to end the show?
Big booped Pomeranians.